For our scripture this morning, I'm going to invite you to just listen. It's a two verses from 1 Kings 19, verses 11 through 12. The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a still, small voice. We'll be referencing that in a little while. We want to do a song now that I wrote quite some time ago, and Graybeard helped tweak it. And I got to thinking about all of the screens in our lives, all of the screens. Think about how many screens you encounter on a regular basis. Your TV screen, your computer screen, an ATM screen, your cell phone screen, a smartphone screen. If you have an iPad or something like that, an iPad screen. I mean, the list of screens, the screen in front of you in your car, is almost endless. And so wrote this song, and it's called Screens. I got screens on my left, got screens on my right. Screens are coming every day and night. I got screens. I got screens. No fooling about it. My life is full of those screens. You can show me the world by this on my phone. I can text my friends. No, I'm never alone. Screens in my car can show me the speed. Outside temperature and time I can read. I got screens. I got screens. No fooling about it. My life is full of those screens. If I wake in the night, screens will give me the hour. My iPad will tell me to brush a flower. Each place that I go, there's a screen on the wall. Praise the pixels, hope the power don't fall. I got screens. CD and a plasma TV. There are tiny dots and soon it's all in 3D. Around in Times Square at the Super Bowl. You can find them in the bathroom on the streets as you roll. I got screens. I got screens. No fooling about it. My life is full of those screens. On the new stuff, but how do I know when is enough enough? Who's in control? Who is calling the tune? If I keep at this pace, I'll be worn out by noon. I got screens. I got screens. No fooling about it. My life is full of those screens. No fooling about it. My life is full of those screens. Time screens fade from view. I pray, O Lord, to see the face of you. There comes a time, screens fade from view. I pray, O Lord, to see the face of you. I've got some things I'd like to share with you at this point, and they kind of flow out of that song. We are so bombarded in our era with technology, and a lot of it comes to us, is mediated to us in the form of screens, not all of it. But how do we live in balance in this modern age? Today I want to spend a few minutes and share some insights with you, and I hope I'm going to speak not just to the adults, but also to the young people that are here. In fact, it's quite possible that later, if you're here with children, that you might want to talk about some of the things that are going to be brought up in the next few minutes. I'm referencing a book by William Powers called Hamlet's Blackberry. And he brings to the fore in his book seven figures from history. They're all men lived, and each of them had to deal with the emerging technology of his day. I think that if you're like me, we tend to be a bit arrogant, and we think that the only era in which any technology emerged is right now. But the truth of the matter is from the beginning of time, new technologies were emerging. And the deep thinkers and the philosophers and people in general had to figure out, how do we come to terms with these technologies? So I'm going to invite you to picture seven chairs up here today and let our panel be the seven individuals that Powers talks about in his book. Because I know I'm throwing a lot at you very quickly, you have the outline for my sermon in front of you, and you may or may not want to reference that as you go. The first person in our panel, again, based on the work of William Powers, is Plato. Plato lived at a time when the written word was becoming very popular. People were beginning more and more to know how to write and to be able to get letters delivered properly. And people began to substitute being with someone, and they instead were sending letters back and forth. And Plato, watching this emerging new technology, kind of stepped to the fore, and he gave counsel to his followers, and he said, "Don't lose the intimacy of the face-to-face encounter." At a time when you all are going high tech, he said, and sending all of this written communication out, don't lose the intimacy of seeing someone's face. Now, does that apply today? Well, let me ask you this question. When is the last time that you sent or received an email or a text message or even a letter and you thought, I wish I could see their face? I wish I could see the expression upon them. And if Plato was here today, he would say to every one of us, as we live with the technology, don't miss and lose the intimacy of the face-to-face encounter. Okay? My next one in our panel is Seneca, perhaps a little less known for some of you. Seneca basically ran the Roman Empire during the time that Nero was emperor. Seneca found himself living in a crowded city of Rome. And through the advances in technology, they had begun to develop an ability to put more and more people in smaller and smaller spaces. And in his writing, Seneca spoke about the need to identify the quiet space within yourself. The quiet space within yourself. If you're going to have people all around you, all the time, you're going to need to be consciously aware of the call to find the quiet space within yourself. And then listen to this. He warned that the ceaseless quest for information could strangle inner space. I want you to think about that the next time you walk into your house and the TV's blaring with CNN or Fox News or something, and you got the internet on and you're getting your news through that and so forth. I want you to remember the words that Seneca wrote centuries ago, that the ceaseless quest for information could strangle the inner space. I think it can work that way. I think it can work. And if Seneca was in our panel this morning, he'd be talking to you about that. Now, not everything we're going to focus on in these few minutes is negative, because the next one is an invitation to consider the positive aspects of technology. We're going to look at Gutenberg. Gutenberg invented what? The printing press. And out of his work, he made it possible for profound one-on-one encounters between people. Now an individual who was literate and could read could now encounter the thinking, the understandings, the wisdom of somebody that might live a long way away, or maybe had lived in an entirely different era of humanity. And through Gutenberg advances, it made possible to have these incredible encounters. The idea here was that technology at its best could facilitate tremendous dialogue. Now, think about how you use technology at its best. How you use it at its best. When you encounter somebody that you otherwise would never be exposed to, or you are exposed to ideas that otherwise would never enter your mind and your life, or you even encounter the faith of somebody that otherwise might touch you, might not touch you, might not even reach you. And I think Gutenberg might ask, as part of our panel, where is technology really working for you? I think that's worthy of consideration. Where is technology really blessing you? I'm hoping I'm going to give you a lot of ponderings to take out of today. All right? Now, the pendulum swings back as we go to number four. Shakespeare. His thought is kind of a counterbalance to Gutenberg. By Shakespeare's day, technology, and mainly we're talking about the printing press, had buried London in paper. They were buried in handbills and flyers and posters. And there was just all kinds of paper available. And so in a passage in Hamlet, Shakespeare advocated throwing out anything necessary, even including books, to make room for the one thing that matters, the development of your mind. If Shakespeare were up here as part of our panel this morning, I think he would say to each of us, he might ask this question: what otherwise good thing might you need to eliminate so that your mind could be expanded and grow, and in some cases find peace? It may be something really good. I mean, it may be something that's very laudable and that kind of thing. But Shakespeare's idea is nothing should interfere with our growth and the exploration of our minds. Now, before we continue, have you noticed that what's present here is a real call to be aware of technology and how it's impacting us. There is a vital need for us to be conscious of where technology blesses us, and also a vital need for us to be aware of where technology is constraining us. Okay, I've got three more I want to share for our panel of seven. The next one is Benjamin Franklin. Franklin adds something to our conversation about managing our lives. He proposes setting positive goals. It's not enough to just eliminate things, but he would suggest to us we need to have positive goals in our lives. And Ben Franklin, during a certain segment of his life, wrote out positive goals on paper, and he stuffed them in it and carried them with him wherever he went, from morning through noon through night. And he would pull those out and say, am I moving toward my positive goals? Now, here's the challenge that I want to issue to you. Sometime today or this week, when you flip on one of the screens, let's say your TV, ask yourself, what are my goals for this encounter? Why am I doing this? Well, maybe I just need to be entertained, or maybe I need some laughs, or maybe I want to learn some history from the History Channel, or whatever the case might be. But what if when you turned on your TV, you said, what are my goals? What if when you turned on your internet, your computer, and you started 1 hour with your internet, if you said, what are my goals here? What am I hoping to have happen out of this time? Or as you pick up your cell phone or your iPad or whatever the case might be, Benjamin Franklin would say, what are your positive goals as you interact with technology? Now, the sixth one is somebody that I think you might have encountered in high school, I'm hoping. Thoreau. And many of you were probably assigned, if you were like me anyway, to read Walden. But what I want to focus on with Thoreau is his emphasis on a home, on a home. And Thoreau proposed that a home needs to be a zone of inwardness. The idea is we come to our home and encounter our inward world. Now, that was easy enough to achieve in some earlier eras. But what has happened now with the advent of technology is the moat around the castle has been bridged. And now, when those screens are on in your home, the world invades your inwardness. Think about it. You go home, you flip on that television or whatever you have on, and it's no longer quiet private time. The world is intruding beyond the walls of your home and is filling your place. One approach to designing a home that emerged in the 1930s that I would offer to you is evaluate your home and each room in your home, where it falls on the spectrum from connectedness to solitude. Connectedness to solitude. Which rooms in your home are places of being connected to other people? Well, I might list any place that people are welcomed into your home when you entertain or when somebody pops in. There. Okay, that's probably a room that's designated for connectedness or a room where there's a lot of technology. But I want to ask the further question and talk about this with each other later or with your kids. Where is the place of solitude in your home? Where is the place that you would go to be alone with yourself and with God? With God. Now, if there are screens there, do you deliberately shut them off? Or maybe in your place of solitude, there are no screens and so forth. But I'll leave you at this with Thoreau's part. I'll just leave you with that question. In your home is his own of inwardness. And the final figure, and this may bring a smile to some of our faces, is Marshall McLuhan. And he's the only one that's been alive during some of our lifetimes. And McLuhan pointed out that our devices mold, shape, and determine how we encounter the world. Now, we might be tempted to say, well, I just use them and so forth. But the truth of the matter is, when I pull out my cell phone, it's influencing how I perceive the world. If I begin to communicate to the world by text messages, it's seriously constricting what I'm saying, right? If I'm encountering much of the world through email, it's seriously impacting how I interact with the world. And I want to suggest to you that Marshall McLuhan, if he was here today, would say, look at every one of your devices, or if you will, screens, and ask yourself, how is that molding and shaping me? Because it is forming me and how I experience the world. Well, let me begin to close with this thought. And I'm referencing the text this morning. After the wind and all of the wind, after the earthquake and all of the hubbub of the earthquake, and after the fire and the chaos of the fire, where was God encountered? In a still, small voice. Listen and make time and do the things necessary for that still, small voice. I want to suggest that there needs to come a time when the screens fade from view and we God to be present with us. There comes a time screens fade from view. I pray, O Lord, to see the face of you. There comes a time screens fade from view. I pray, O Lord, to see the face of you. Amen.